from the twisted realm of science and the darkest pits of reason comes chilling tales of godlessness. Bear witness to the unfathomable terror that is the Good Atheist.
Welcome to the Good Atheist Podcast. My name is Jacob Forte.
And I'm Ryan Harkness.
Today on the show, it's going to be a bit of a, well, discussion-y show, if you want. Light on the topics, but high on philosophical discussions. And hopefully that's not a problem for you. I like switching it up every once in a while. I think the interview thing's cool. Bible stories are cool. So this is one of those shows. I don't know how people feel about that. How do you think they feel about it?
I don't know. I think it's okay. It's always good to do different things, like, you know, have a new show. You know what we haven't done in a while? We haven't done Mailbag. Unless you did Mailbag without me, in which case, who needs to do Mailbag again?
No. I didn't want to do... I wanted to wait on the Mailbag for a very, very special episode. And I totally forgot to tell you about this before we started the show, and now I feel like I'm going to ambush you with this idea. Can I present you this idea?
Yes, you can. Ambush me. Ambush me!
I'm going to totally fucking ambush you, because... Here's this, there's a general site news that I have to cover first before I ambush you, and this is the kind of, like, you can skip to about minute five if this is a big problem for you, but this will let you know everything that's happening, because big changes are happening. And well, I'm sure you've seen the big changes. What was one of those big changes? Oh my God, shows are on time. What the fuck?
I know, it's like on a schedule or something now.
It's ridiculous. But yeah, that was part of this whole, you know, a tiny part of big changes. And number one on that change is the way that the podcast is being structured. See, back when we decided to do the bonus show, I guess we never really thought about how locking a whole bunch of shows behind closed doors might even affect things in subtle ways. Like, how many shows do you think we've recorded so far?
For the Good Atheist, probably, I'd say at least or above a lot, 200. 200 is kind of like... feels right, because that's kind of what I've done, what we did on the other one.
Right, that's what you think we did, but you forget that there is 107 bonus shows locked behind. That number is very accurate. It's almost 200.
So
you're 300 off. So here's what's going to happen. In a few days, in I think, how many more podcasts? We're at 188. So in 12 more podcasts, it's going to be episode 300. And I know it's going to confuse a lot of motherfuckers, and because that's just how it is. We've recorded 300 shows.
It's a lot of shows.
Yeah, that's a lot of shows. So, and here's what else is happening. Now, there used to be, or there still is, as of the end of September, a regular membership that you can pay for $20. That's going away. That option no longer exists. It will be replaced by the same price to buy the essentials. DVD or, you know, torrent file or whatever other way you kids out there get your media. But yeah, it'll be like a best of. And then we'll keep the hardcore ones and they get all the access. But you know what? Most of you, it doesn't even fucking matter because we're continuing two free shows a week. So that's how it is.
So it actually works out for people who don't pay anything even better, because they're going to get two shows a week for free.
They can continue to listen for free and be like, all right, that's what you get. Now, what happens is that after there's about a 3 or 4 months, I forget how many months it is right now, of backlog, and then that shit gets locked down. So it just sort of, as the show progresses, things get locked down. But there's a few things that don't get locked down. Number one are interviews. And you know how many interviews I do? I do a shitload of interviews.
It seems like you're doing a lot. You're making a lot of friends, people... connections around the scene and such. It seems like, especially considering the topic of today's show, it's kind of getting you a little bit more involved in what's going out there in the world of atheism.
Well, it definitely puts me more in contact. Now, sometimes, you know, you can offend... Somebody can be... I realize one thing is that I can be offensive to some, and that's just something that I'm going to have to deal with. Which is why I'm glad that the show is becoming more popular, so that people can listen to the show and get a good idea of what goes down on the show. Like, I don't really mince words. I don't try to play nice. I may say things that are rude, and that's just the way I am. I don't want to change that. I think it's fun.
You've been like that since high school, so I don't think you could change even if you wanted to.
It's true. It's true. It's just part of my personality. I just have to accept it. I'm a cantankerous fuck who doesn't really hold the most, let's just say, politically correct opinions. And nor do I want to. I'm not in the business of trying to tell everybody else how to live. I'm just in the business of trying to make people laugh and make people think. That's it. I just want to make you think. Make you laugh and make you think. I'm Dr. Frank. Professor Frank. Is he a doctor? I guess he's just a professor. That's kind of worrisome. Yeah.
Anybody can be a professor.
Yeah, it's true.
Pshaw.
I'm a professor at Divinity School. Oh, you're a Jedi expert is what you are. An expert in nonsense. Please tell me more about this nonsense. Okay, but back to just let's try to wrap up all the changes, because that's one part of the big changes, and it'll look different. But here's the thing: the bonus shows just aren't named bonus shows anymore. When you go back in the archive, they'll be like, say, episode 44 and a half, or depending on their date, just so it can be arranged via date. But there's other methods of classification that we're going to use other than the episode numbers, because the numbers don't fucking matter, right? What's more important is how it's going to be categorized. That's in the long term, though, so, you know, and plus when people become hardcore members, yeah, that's a way that we get the funds necessary to feed back into the site that we're trying to build.
So are you saying that if a person wants to find all of the shows where we talk about abortion, or where we talk about Mormons, or we talk about whatever topic, they're going to be able to go back and just find that easily?
Yep. I've been doing this slow fucking laborious process, not alone, thank God, because I now have a wonderful helper. But, you know, going back and trying to tag everything so it's a lot more, you know, it's a lot easier to browse that stuff. And not only this, but, you know, there's different categories that I've been creating, like just the interview categories, because I think some people just like the interviews, and maybe they're just curious about other interviews and don't want to go through this laborious process of trying to identify the numbers. I mean, I realized this myself when I was going through. What a mess! I'm trying to clean up that mess. Oh my God, like I said before, we're almost to 300 shows here. So it is a lot of work. And, you know, even if you're a $20 member and you're wondering, hey, what's going to happen to me? You'll be upgraded. Don't worry about you. You'll be fine. We're not going to fuck anybody over. Can be nice about it. Because, you know, this is just the way that I want content to proceed in the future, and I think it just makes sense. You know, the hardcore support, no matter what, and they're the major part of the reason why we're still around. And the $20 option was barely being used anyways, and I think it's just better if it's a product that looks awesome and sexy and is polished, you know, the way that I can really put the fucking time and effort into things when I really want to polish. And if you guys saw the cover of the book, you know that I have a high standard of fucking polish. Just wait till you see the cover of the DVD. It's looking so badass right now. Oh my God.
Well, Jacob, I salute you on your continued quest into the wild west of podcast businessmanship.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate your support and your help on that endeavor. As we sail, as you're my companion on the sail. And what's so great is that I've only gotten more companions over the years. The cool thing about the Essentials will be that everyone that's a co-host has, like, different fundamental shows where things are either revealed about them or the nature of my relationship with them. So it's kind of a cool way for people when they get the DVD to see it arranged in that sense, too. You know, like, it'll have value for people that are also fans of the show, because it'll be a brand new way to absorb that content in a way that I just condense it. Because, like, guys, are you really going to go listen to 200 shows? Come on. No, you're not. You're not that hardcore. I mean, a couple people are. There was one guy, I think he listened to 150 shows in the span of 2 weeks. And I'm like, am I in your head, guy? That's scary.
Am I telling you to do things?
Oh, man, I feel like David Koresh right now.
Give me your wife. Give me your wife.
It's a spiritual marriage, don't you know? You'll still be married to her. That's what I love about all these religious guys. That's the first thing they do. Be like, I set up a religion to fuck my neighbor's wife.
Well, it's weird. It just gets like that. I have to imagine that it's some kind of one of those weird monkey things in our brain where just where you get into a position of power, one of those things just in the back of your head is you should be fucking all the women. And you see it all the time in these weird wacko religions. And it was even happening. You remember that story about the Amish hate crime where the guy cut the where the guys busted into that house and cut off these people who were being shunned beards? Like apparently that was going on in that area too. Like part of the reason they were getting tossed out is because they were resisting the fact that these guys wanted to fuck their wives. And they're like, I don't think this is what Amish is being all about. We're supposed to be about, you know, like nice hats and churning butter and, you know, raising
barns.
Being
quaint.
Yeah, being quaint. Being quaint. Care, you know, taking care of horses, My Little Pony, all that.
Look, okay, I think you're totally right when you said there must be some kind of monkey reason. Yeah. Because we's monkeys. And if we look at our cousins and we see their behavior, what's interesting is that we see a range of behavior, right? We see in chimpanzee societies where it's fairly patriarchal. In gorillas, it's extremely patriarchal, where there's just one male and he's fucking everyone else. And if you are too weak, well, too bad for you. And, you know, you're going down genetic dead end. That's it for you. And we are somewhere in the middle. And we can even look, like, you want to know a hilarious way to tell? One of the telltale signs to suggest that we are in the middle?
What's that?
Look, you look at our penises and our balls.
Look at them!
Right. Here's the deal. The chimpanzees that are more sexually promiscuous, that have a more matriarchal kind of society, like, say, the bonobo monkeys, have gigantic testicles. It would be the equivalent of you having a peach as a fucking testicle.
You mean you don't have a peach as a testicle?
That's not supposed to be that big, Ryan. I think you should consult a doctor. Are you really backed up that bad?
Yeah, to a degree, but that's okay.
Oh, no. Right. Fans of the show. This, you know, it's like, could there be a horn? You know, this will get a call out. Yeah. Fans ho! Not that kind of ho, though.
Well, yeah, no, I'm not as good as at Facebooking my fans and turning that into relationships, Jacob.
You looking at me here? You looking at me?
Hey, it worked for you.
It did work for me.
It worked quite well.
Thank you. It's the new way that people are connecting. You can't deny it. That's how the new generation, the youngins, do it.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like if I did that, it would be like some kind of What's that movie? Fatal Attraction? Something horrible would happen.
Yeah, because someone is that much of a fan of your work. Come on, dude. Do you think you're Raphael or something?
Yeah, a little.
Oh, right.
With my fart jokes and my dick jokes.
Yeah, you're the Shakespeare of dick jokes. Oh, wait, no. Shakespeare is the Shakespeare of dick jokes. Just, you know, double entendre dick jokes. Well, some of that worship is pretty raunchy, if I recall. Anyways, where the fuck were we?
We had just gone, I don't know. We had just finished talking about the new system for the good atheist.
Oh, no. There was one thing I did want to mention about that kind of monkey behavior, because this actually, I think, segues us into what we were generally talking about. No, we were talking about nutballs. Yes. Size of testicles. Right. Let's go back to size of testicles. So the chimpanzee has a size of testicle of a, you know, fairly large. And that's just because they do more fucking. There's no real, the pressure is different. The pressure now is you need to have a lot of sperm to impregnate because you're dealing with a lot of other potential sperm. Yes, I know it's disgusting, but they fuck a lot. This is how it is. Okay? Maybe that's too gross for us. Now you got the other side, which is sort of where you have the male gorilla, his testicles are tiny, you know, puny, like a shriveled up raisin. So now you understand that we are somewhere in the middle, and that's kind of where I think we find ourselves a lot of the time. We're the middle monkey, you know, where we have strong, let's just say, paternal or strongly patriarchal, I mean, tendencies, a pull, because it is a successful strategy of nature. It works for the gorillas. And by works, I don't mean that this is good. It's just that they get by. All right. In the bonobo size, they get by. But let me ask you something. Do you want the gorilla one where everyone's fighting each other? There's constant, like, beatings?
Oh, yeah.
Or do you want the one where everyone's fucking all the time?
Yeah, I guess we're kind of in the middle of those, aren't we?
We are in the middle of those. Our balls are the perfect indication of that.
Hmm.
So I think that... But here's another thing, too, that leads us into our general discussion that we're going to kind of, like, blend into the rest of the episode, right, in and out of, which is something that's called group polarization. And this is a really important thing to know that I feel like most people don't. Like, this is extremely, let's say, telling of the world around us and even things that are happening in our own scene, the atheism scene. So group polarization is basically this idea that when groups of people come together that share particular beliefs, let's say like a Republican Party as an example, then the more they discuss, the more that the group will push people towards one extreme. So let's say, again, this group of Republicans have come together to discuss whether or not they should have universal health care. If they had some weak opposition to it, by the end of it, they'll have stronger opposition to it. That's what the group does. This is what groupthink causes. So this is a phenomenon that, once you understand, this is just a natural polarizing effect that we have. And you realize that there's lots of factors that allow this to happen, right? I mean, the internet, perfect fucking example. This is where we're starting to really learn about group polarizations, because we can finally get some data on shit. There was an interesting study that was done on Twitter where they analyzed the Twitter discussion after Dr. Tiller got murdered. Do you remember Dr. Tiller's murder run?
Yes, I do. It was pretty fucking bullshit.
It was a big load of motherfucking bullshit. Especially the way that everybody on the right had fucking painted a target on his back and basically said, like, somebody pull the trigger and God will bless you.
Just in case, we have a listener who doesn't know, Dr. Tiller was an abortion doctor. And he unfortunately had a name that rhymed with killer, so they called him Tiller the Killer. And he was basically the face of abortion doctors in America. And he was assassinated by a right-wing nut job after what was it, months or years of basically media like Fox News, etc. Like,
well, first off, this wasn't the first time that Dr. Tiller had been shot. Basically, a crazed woman had opened fire on him, shooting him in both arms, and then he went back to work like a few days later, just in defiance. You know what I mean? Saying, I'm not going to be pushed around by these fundamentalists who are just constantly blissfully unaware of the reality of abortion. You know what I was watching the other day that kind of fucking blew my mind? I was watching Dirty Dancing. Yeah, I know, what's wrong with me? But I realized I'd never seen the fucking movie. Everybody talks about Dirty Dancing, this $5 million movie that ends up making $230 million. I had never fucking seen. So
you know that's ridiculous. Like, you grew up in an all female household and you didn't fucking end up, because that the only reason that guys have seen Dirty Dancing is because
their
women
girlfriends,
any situation with their, I saw Dirty Dancing anytime that there was, like, it's in my teenage years, there'd be like one of those cola and sleeping bag co-ed fucking sleepover things, the girls would want to watch fucking Dirty Dancing.
Right, but do you know what the subplot of Dirty Dancing is?
What's that?
Abortion. The subplot, and what I mean subplot, is that this is never officially discussed, okay? It is referred to as a problem, okay? Or her problem, or an accident or something, or a situation. But never is it explicitly said that the girl, who is Patrick Swayze's ex-girlfriend, is pregnant from the kind of hotel sleazebag, I guess, Mr. Johnny No Rubber. So Johnny No Rubber knocks a girl up, and at the beginning of the subplot, everybody's trying to figure out what happens, and Baby gives her money to get an illegal abortion, because this happens when abortion is still illegal in the United States in the 1960s. Okay, so she gets a botched abortion, and Baby's dad, who is a doctor, is there to kind of, like, make sure that she doesn't fucking die, and assumes that this this very older gentleman, let's just say, is the one that is behind all of this, that knocked her up and put her in danger and shit like that, even though he's an honorable fella.
Well, not so honorable that he didn't stick it in Jennifer Grey when she's how old? How old
well,
is she?
17, yeah. And let's also not forget that he was basically the kind of gigolo of the place as well. So
yeah,
slept with many older ladies and was being paid. So male prostitution. See, but it's a romantic story of a prostitute who falls in love with an underage girl. It's touching. But yes, the subplot is fucking abortion. And when you watch that and you just realize, hey, you know what? Girls just gonna do it. And what do they suffer from? Well, a lot. I mean, death, being sterile for their whole lives, to name just a few fucking problems that occur when you just, oh, I don't know, have some guy with a dirty ass knife try to do it, which is what they describe also. That part's graphic, but they can't even talk about why it is, which is also explains why Dirty Dancing had such a small budget. It was so controversial that no major studio wanted to do it, so it was an independent movie.
So you obviously went on Wikipedia and read a bunch of stuff about it.
Well, I was kind of fascinated when I was watching, and I'm like, is this the fucking subplot? And you know that we talk a lot about abortion on this fucking show.
Yeah, it does tend to come up, and I'm actually impressed so far. We haven't said anything exceedingly offensive yet.
All right, well, we'll put the clock on there. when will something offensive be said? We'll just have to wait and see. But let's go back to the main issue that I was talking about on Twitter. So, and related to group polarization. So basically, here's what they found. They found that issues related to Dr. Tiller's death or their opinions concerning abortion were only strengthened by all of this discussion that everybody had. So this is a big problem. I don't think we fully understand what capacity group polarization has, really, the impact it has on society as a whole. Now, I know everybody uses this trope, and I'm sure everybody's fucking tired of it, but I do want to talk about Germany in the 1930s, all right? Not because I suddenly want to compare everything that anybody does to the fucking Nazis, but I want to compare shifts that happened between the left and the right, okay? Because it's not just about Germany. Same thing fucking happened in Spain, all right? We're talking about the rise of two separate ideologies. So you have National Socialist and you have Communism, right? And both, at least philosophically, are intellectual oppositions to one another. And they're reflections of the way that people feel, like different classes of individuals, different even social classes. You got, say, communism is a rise of a kind of proletariat mentality. That let's all share the labor. Yeah, like, that's going to fucking happen. Let's all share the money. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Who gets to decide that shit? And then you have these other ideology that says, no, let's be an oligarchy. Let's control the way that let's control labor, let's control all these other factors. And these ideologies are sort of like examples of polarizations, and their extremes are a result of this polarization. Because I'm sure everybody else was probably in the fucking middle about it. But they, with further discussion, they were continually pushed towards one side. So, you know, I ask you, what are we supposed to do about this kind of effect, right?
I don't know, man. I got nothing. It seems like it's kind of a mob mentality thing, a crowd mentality, and it just, I can totally see how when things go wrong, it's kind of like Lord of the Flies, where the kids are kind of getting out of control, and next thing you know, they drop a rock on Piggy, and Piggy dies, and that's one of that moment where you'd figure they'd go, holy shit, this just got real, and we should calm down. But instead, it's like, oh, so that's, well, now that we know that can happen, and that wasn't the end of everything, it's time just to kill everybody else.
Right. Well, there actually is a solution to all of this, strangely enough. And I think sometimes it seems counterintuitive. And that solution actually lies in game theory. Because we can analyze the way that people or these kinds of polarizations happen, and there are solutions to these. Now, part of this polarization happens, I think, in a very fundamentally easy way to understand. Let's use a game called Monopoly and talk about our Monopoly stories. And I'm sure you can understand that in Monopoly, you know you reach a dead end when there's all of a sudden a lack of compromise on anybody's part, right? That's the end of the game. You cannot play this game unless people decide that they're going to be cooperative, that they're going to trade properties, that they're going to take risks, that they're not going, that they're going to be, that they're going to take their advantaged position and make it vulnerable to being on an equal playing field. And that's a tough gambit here, because in that gambit, in the tit for tat strategy, what often happens is that it's a very simple kind of like dynamic. Let's assume that there are two people and they're trying to achieve a goal. And part of that goal means that they have to work together, like as if they're climbing a mountain, let's say, right? They got to work together. And at some point, maybe, you know, because they're racing to that top, maybe one of them will try to sabotage the other and, you know, be in the way. But if they do that, then there's less chance that there any one of them is actually going to achieve that prize. They're both going to lose. They're both going to be in a position of where you call it's called a death spiral. That's when one person is being uncooperative and your response is to also be uncooperative. This is a situation that's untenable. This leads to a death spiral. This basically is the, all right, hit the fucking nuke button. That's it. We're done.
Man, you know what's scary about that is it kind of describes sort of what's going on in American politics. And that's a bit freaky.
Right. But here's the good news. The death spiral can actually be solved relatively easily by taking a few on the chin. What that means is that sometimes your opponent is going to act aggressively against you or do something where you feel like as though you should retaliate, but you don't do it. And in fact, sometimes that might occur yet again. Like, it's not just an example of, well, I'll let them get away with it once and then we'll just see. We're talking about where sometimes you really have to do a kind of passive resistance where you have to be willing to show how much you're willing to cooperate, because in a sense, by doing that, you take away a lot of the justification that your opponent has in having wronged you, right? Like, this is a game of exchange, and they are just as interested in exchange as you are, because they have just as much to gain and just as much to lose. So the situation presents itself where we're like, what is the situation and what is the solution? And the solution, quite honestly, is more cooperation. And how do you achieve more cooperation? Well, like, that's not impossible. Like, that's actually pretty simple. The way that that's achieved is, first, do not insulate yourself with groups of other people that are only like-minded. And that's a pretty controversial thing for a person who has an atheist podcast to say.
Yeah, that is true. We are kind of boxed off at this point.
Right. But, you know, here's one of the things that I think I do is just part of my job, if you want, is I read a lot of opinions that are contrary to my own. I read their opinions. I try to put myself in their frame of mind, because no one thinks they're the bad guy. No one thinks they're wrong. You must try to understand that person's position better than they understand it themselves. I think only then can you really truly convince someone that they're wrong. You know, everybody, the most powerful tool that you can use to convince someone of their error is empathy. And empathy is part of that whole tit for tat strategy. Just as a natural mathematical expression, it can be understood thusly that you feel the person's pain and that pain is imprinted on you and has an effect on you. That's how it's effective. You've shared part of that pain, that part of that experience. And that makes you sort of like much more sensitive to that occurring again. And you're just like, wow, what a powerful fucking tool that you can speak to people and it can affect them in such a deep and profound way. I mean, I shudder to think how many times perhaps that's happened of people who've listened to this podcast. Sometimes I don't want to even think about it because the ramifications of that are too frightening. But the general point is, I'm like, we should feel compelled to reach out. And again, I mean, I feel weird because I'm on a very different spectrum of disbelief. But here's where I think that this plays into the atheism scene. And I'll use as a good example, lots of the recent activity and discussion that's been going on with all the Atheism Plus stuff. I don't know if you've kept on up with any of that. I don't think so, Ryan, right? You don't generally read that shit?
No, I try to stay out of it. I right now I'm more interested in reading up on like what the church is up to.
Yeah,
and
that's fair. You know,
everything going on in the Middle East with this Innocence of Muslims thing and the ramifications that that's having.
You've got a kind of global vision of things. I like to look at it to try to attempt at least to be introspective about the scene, because I just don't think that there's a lot of critics about the scene in general and what people do, because, you know, like with any person that you ally yourself with, you're less likely to be honest about it. It's like your friends, right? Are you going to really tell them when they're being absolutely shitty, or are you just going to kind of let it get out of control until it's just too late and then the friendship's ruined? Oh shit, did I describe people's lives? Anyways, my general point is there needs to be some kind of criticism. And one of the criticisms that I think that we need to lob at each other is the fact that a lot of us hold, say, opinions, but very few facts. And, you know, as a group that sort of cherishes facts, I don't see a lot of effort to really get some numbers down. Like, let me give you a good example, right? Let's try to understand how our group would compare to, say, other groups. We try to do this, you know, like, we rely on other groups to do these studies, first and foremost. We don't even try to pay to get these studies done. Like, are we not really interested in that information? Do we not want to generate more information about us? Just out of fucking curiosity, I don't care what your opinion is on anything, like, don't we, quote-unquote, worship the fucking numbers, the facts? I just feel like every time I'm reading, you know, an article, that's what it's light on. Light on some facts. Where's some reference notes? Where's the fucking links to facts and shit? I think we're done with opinions. I think we can move on to fact now. Let's try to find out things about ourselves that are true rather than just a kind of random opinions. So with that in mind, let's deal with how could group polarization work within our own group? Well, number one, let's look at the purpose of the good atheist, right? I've mentioned before, if we were ranking a spectrum, I'd put us on a what, like an 8? Or have we softened over the years? I'm not sure. What do you think we stand?
Scale? You know what? I do think we have softened to a certain degree.
Yeah.
Well, so maybe take it down to a 7. No, trust me. Oh, yeah? I mean, you go on, check out some of these Facebook groups, atheist Facebook groups, and see the angry, vitriolic things that they put up there. And you know, we are crude and vile, and we swear a lot, and we have some controversial ideas, but we're not you know, just bam, 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 putting down you know, these graphs and images that are just basically, yeah, Muslims suck and everybody from the Middle East is a bigoted idiot and we hate them. You know, the fact of the matter is all of the introspection that you've done, all the thinking on everything, it's given you a wider, more understanding, not so much accepting maybe, but at least, yeah, empathetic.
I'm just getting older. That's what it is. We all saw.
Well, I mean, you're getting wiser. You got a better understanding of what's going on. You've met more people. You've seen more situations. You have more knowledge.
It's true. So, and you know what? But that's the natural progression, right? I think that some people are faster. I think some people are just there because, for maybe the wrong reasons, right? Like where they've never actually gone through that phase. I think everybody should go through a little bit of that phase. Experiment with one side and then decide for yourself where you fit into that. Don't let anybody else choose for you. That'd be my first fucking piece of advice. But yeah, like, okay, we're 7 now. So if you analyze the whole spectrum of disbelief, you realize that the reason that what the scene has been successful right now is that group polarization has been necessary to create the atheism scene in general. We had to create a bit of an otherness. Why? Because we're suffocated by religious and superstitious thought. It literally is like a blanket crushing us. So, you know, we did have to push that away, and part of it was expressing our newfound confidence and realizing that, hey, we seem to be winning all the arguments. Well, that feels fucking good. And you know what? What happens when you first start winning arguments? Man, you want to have a lot of arguments because winning feels good. And then eventually you get over yourself. You're just like, well, okay, I'm done with the arguments. I feel like I'm going around in circles. And then you realize that they do have little power in convincing someone of something. In fact, like the data was suggesting you're only making their, you're only sort of like serving to push them towards one extreme. Now, before I start making you panic about all of this, be like, oh my God, we're all being pushed to extremes. I think I mentioned this on one of the other shows. What our extremism is now in terms of like the even political spectrum is nothing compared to what it used to be. All right. It's still polite disagreement. We haven't gotten to the fucking, you know, anybody getting killed. And I think our reaction would be pretty fucking strong if it did, because that's just how we are. We don't accept that level of violence. This is not a, you know, that's how you lose the argument. Now, you crushed that little boy with a rock and you lost the argument.
Yeah, well, you know, there are some exceptions. Tiller the Killer getting killed for one.
Right, but what was the reaction that you would have recommended for that, right? What is the reaction of a civilized society? In a sense, in the tit for tat, we as the civilized society, we keep taking it in the chin. We keep taking it in the chin with a whole bunch of people murder diplomats because of some movie that some asshole made. And you realize that, you know, again, in tit for tat strategy, in the old days, what would have been the reaction? Okay, well, Rome sends the fucking soldiers down and let's crush this fucking rebellion. But that's not an effective strategy. That's only going to cause more fucking problems. What do? Well, you take it in the chin, and it sucks to fucking take it in the chin, but you do it because you're interested in peace at the end of the day. And you know what? You are more interested in peace, but you have to, you're always going to get more bruised in that process. But trust me, it is worth it. All right? The alternative is our mutual annihilation. And I don't think we're going to accept that. I think we realize what the consequence of that. Unless you're a religious fundamentalist. But that's a different show. That's a different show entirely.
Yeah, have you talked about everything that's been going on over there? Because that would be fun sometime.
Well, we can do a show. You seem to be, you know, you seem like you want to talk about it. You could do the show. You could even do it right now if you wanted.
Oh, well, not right now, but I do want to point out one thing about the whole thing in Libya with that. Now, yes, that terrible, terrible YouTube video has pissed off Muslims across the globe, and they are storming embassies over that, or at least under the pretense of that. But the initial Libya one was actually a terrorist attack that had been planned and basically used the outrage as a way to kind of get in there. They killed... they had targeted the ambassador that got murdered, and they were actually going in there to kill these guys because there were dudes inside that embassy that were basically in charge of organizing the Libyan government's attacks on militant organizations. So it was a straight up military attack, as opposed to what is basically being portrayed as, you know, Muslims getting crazy.
All right, that is you're right. It's kind of like Salman Rushdie said. There is how did you describe it again? An outrage industry right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, it ties into what we're talking about on this episode, because it does kind of cause that you know, that group think mentality, and it pushes people more, you know, to one side or another. So. It kind of touches in on that a little bit.
I think, though, what's important is to make sure that whatever side you inadvertently find yourself on, number one, that you didn't create that opposition yourself. You know, every idea will create a kind of antithesis to that idea. So you got to be careful about the ideas that you just allow to propagate, because they have their own alternatives, if you want, their own polarized opposites that just occur because of the idea that formed. Like, it reminds me a little bit of ant colonies or bee colonies, where all of a sudden the thin fabric that allows their colonies to thrive, that is their genetic similarity, this is oftentimes the only thing that allows them to cooperate. As soon as that is started to shift, let's say they're second cousins instead of first cousins, now it's fucking all out war, because there isn't enough there to kind of guarantee that their interests coincide with your interests. And now it's time for war. But the point is, depending on where one side is willing to escalate, will depend on sort of how far that polarization will go. I'm saying that we don't want to push people too far away. And in the atheism scene, as we look at this sort of like polarization that we were talking about before, as we see the different spectrums, is that I definitely see a point in absolutely every spectrum, right? But what I do think is necessary is that people realize that, number one, as you move throughout these spectrums, don't alienate other people from your life that you may regret later, right? Realize that even in the attempt to come out, you may be so frustrated by the entire event that you yourself want to get into a death spiral fucking argument that just breaks down and just goes somewhere where you don't want to go. That has to be the first impulse that you fight. This is a difficult to learn behavior, but it can be learned. This is something that I think as civilized human beings we have to learn. This is what I think being an adult is all about. Not acting on impulses, but instead learning, having coping mechanisms for them. So you realize, well, I'm not going to treat this person the way that they're treating me. I am going to play the smart game, treat them the way that I want to be treated. And that's a very tough fucking proposition. All right, that's that ludicrous getting slapped in the face part that we always love to laugh with the Jesus thing. But I'm like, don't use that as a good example, because in the tit for tat strategy, that's the correct strategy, is to not react. Because the act of reacting is what's going to cause the further conflict and violence, and you can't have that. Someone's got to back down. You know, we got to back down. Not be so fucking alpha males. And you know what? Your balls will grow, man. Your balls will grow. That's the great news. You're just going to have more fun, enjoyment, and sex. Go the other route. Yeah? Go the other monkey route. You like it?
I don't mind it. It's not too bad.
Well, plus, I mean, think about the alternative. What are the odds that if you lived in an extremely patriarchal style society that you would be the alpha dog? What are the odds? Seriously?
Very, very low. Yeah, very, very low.
Most people probably think that, oh, no, what are you talking about? I'd totally be the alpha dog. Shut the fuck up. You are not a unique flower, snowflake. You're just like that ant colony. We're all part of that motherfucking colony. And you know what? It may turn out that some of the decisions that we make, maybe even some of the things that we like are not even our decision. Like, you ever wonder, why is it you like a certain food? Maybe your particular body chemistry needs that one food, and you've been tricked into liking it. Did you have any fucking decision? No, you just had a desire to fulfill a particular kind of craving. Not your choice. Fucking scary when you think about it, huh? But, you know, you're just another monkey just getting by. Just getting by, man. Doing your monkey thing. I think so long as we realize that people get pushed to those extremes, and you can catch yourself doing it. So my first suggestion would be, don't block anybody instantly. Like, don't form other groups within groups. Keep it loose, right? Keep the association loose, because if you do that, then you know that you're not polarizing people towards opposites. That's just something that people have to accept. I know I've heard other people say, well, I want to create my own group there so it can be a safe haven. I'm like, fight that fucking impulse, okay? Be inclusive in this scene. We all have different ideas. Maybe we don't all agree with them, but we all have to work together, and we just can't polarize each other. That's the important thing. We're already polarizing things by just existing. We're a polarizing force. We reinforce the extremism of other groups. I'm sure that if you're a religious fundamentalist, we're fucking terrifying. I can't even imagine how terrifying we are to them. Do you not think that they probably believe we're the soldiers of the fucking apocalypse or some shit?
Yeah, well, I mean, one very valid point that you know, a lot of these people who are pissed off in the Middle East have is, you know, the U.S. is just flying drones into countries and murdering people. And, you know, yeah, there might be a terrorist or two amongst the wedding party that just got blown up, but you just blew up a wedding. And there's a lot of people who are kind of upset about that. So, you know, when there's these little flashpoints that don't seem to make much sense because, you know, a YouTube video is being shown and it's stupid and cheap, and who would get offended by that? You have to realize that, you know, this is just the straw that broke the camel's back.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that kind of really bothered me is I was reading Alec Baldwin write an article on Huffington Post, and it was titled like, "Can America Be Great Again?" And you know what? It irked me. It irked me for a number of reasons. Number one, I think that it perfectly describes what the problem is with America. Okay, and it's actually a psychological there's a psychological element to it. So we'll discuss that. Now, they did a study on kids, and they found that if you tell your kids that they're smart, they will do less well in school than if you praise their hard work. And that's because if you tell a kid that they're smart, they're afraid to lose that status. And they're less likely to take chances, and part of learning is being wrong and taking risks and sometimes appearing stupid and foolish and admitting when you're fucking wrong. And that's difficult for someone who wants to maintain this illusion that they're smart. So if you tell someone that they're smart, they do less well. I think the same fucking applies for this whole bullshit of calling oneself great. The first rule is you do not get to call yourself great. Other people get to call you great. All right? That's the first motherfucking rule of greatness. It's not a fucking self-title. The other thing, too, is stop supporting this idea that something is just, like, intangible as greatness. You want to know what America is number one? And I'll tell you what they're number one at. Hard work. Seriously. Americans are some of the fucking hardest working people on this planet. I think they compete with the Japanese in terms of the amount of work hours they do. And that's largely because, well, they've been kind of fucked over, but that's a completely different story where people have to work like two or three jobs. Absolutely ludicrous. But I think that at least if you praise the hard work, it would have a better impact on you psychologically, because this whole great thing, you know, what's so great about it? What's so great about the entire country? Where do we begin? Do we begin with the 12 million fucking people killed in a fucking giant genocide? What a great start. A fucking road of bones that built this country. Fantastic. Oh, what else do you have? Oh, how about a civil war that killed, you know, almost a million people? Well, that's great, too. All these things are great. What about the fact that you have the healthcare of a second world fucking nation, or that you treat your veterans, the only people that actually see combat, by the way, like pieces of shit? Like, I'm not exactly sure what's so great here. And I'm like, you don't praise greatness. That's something that's praised upon you. But it's the hard work that put fucking people on the goddamn moon, all right, that did amazing things. But you have to realize that, just like Ryan said, flying drones around to bomb other people, having hundreds of military bases in countries that are not your own, dictating the policies of other countries and setting up your own dictators does not make a country. Okay? It's time to get rid of that moniker. It is a false memory of the past, one that completely obliterates the reality and the perception of the world. Because the rest of the world that hears we are great is fucking sick of it. We don't want to hear that anymore because we don't agree.
And how can you really say, oh, America used to be great back when we treated black people like shit and we had communist witch hunts and numerous other, and we were taking over countries just secretly? It was there were always problems, and I think we're doing pretty well now, and we've just got a self-image problem.
I think that if you look at the countries that do the best, they're the ones that don't have this inflated sense of their own ego. They're willing to admit the things that they do very poorly, and it's still a position where in America it's like whatever you want to believe can be the truth, and that's it. And that is a falsehood that needs to be stopped. It's like, accept reality. It's refreshing to accept it, especially when you can make changes about it. It's much better than living in fucking denial. But you just have to deal with your shit. And here's what's funny. I mean, I think that psychologically you could compare it to a person who has serious debt and has been ignoring all of that shit for a while now because they're like, maybe it'll go away. It won't. But here's the good thing. When you really start looking deep down and start criticizing the very reasons why you're there, you'll actually solve that problem and you can get yourself fucking out of it. It's not like you're not hard workers. Productivity has been going up and up in that country for a very long time. Unfortunately, wages have not fucking been compensated, but that's a different issue entirely. That's theirs to fucking deal with. But to begin with, stop using that fucking word. I'm sick of it. I'm sick of it. And I'm sure most of the people who listen to the show are probably sick of it themselves. Realize that there is very little difference between one's religiosity and one's patriotism. Okay? I'm like every Canada Day, for instance, over here, I would rather people, instead of celebrating, look at all the fucking real problems. That would be a nice day where we're like, what are we doing wrong? What a fucking day that would be. Because at least then we could solve issues rather than patting everybody on the back and saying, good job. Good job.
I don't know. Maybe if we did that 364 days a year, we could then on that one day celebrate the fact that we were awesome.
That's not going to happen. I'm asking for one day. Mine is more realistic. The rest of the time, everybody can go around pretending that they're doing stuff and, you know, playing it, looking like dignified leaders and things. You know, dressing up in suits of cloth armor and going out and shaking hands and mumbling things to each other. Buzzing around like bees. I think that one day we're all going to laugh when we just have a really much more fundamental understanding of human nature and just saw it no differently than we look at the behavior of other complex animals. But it's really difficult for us to do so because we have that, you know, human-centric chauvinism going on. So how can one step outside of oneself and really analyze things? That's hard. And I don't think we like the answer most of the time. And, you know, again, it goes back to that. Do you want the real shit, or do you want to keep living in a fantasy land? And I'm glad that most of the people who listen to the show, they're on the latter side. They're not on the fantasy side. Well, you know what? I think that wraps up the show. Before we go, I'd like to remind everybody again, if you love the show, become a hardcore patron. There's going to be lots of other stuff that I'm going to start including as I'm organizing things. And trust me, like, I'm firing all pistons. There's just a lot of work. Like, it just takes time. So over time, things can continually improve, including the scheduling of the show, more interviews with interesting people.
So are you promising gradual change over time?
I am. Yeah. Gradual change over time. The same way that the only way that change actually happens gradually and over time. And you know what? There is one thing actually I do want to say before I go. there's been a few letters from people who have asked me, hey, you're always taking this really ageist position. And one of the shows, not this week, but next week, we're going to do a show on my ageism. We're going to deal with that. And we're going to talk about some solutions because some people were saying, like, well, do you have any ideas? I'm like, you bet I do. It's going to be an interesting show. So we're going to be talking about the history of ageism. So stay tuned for that one. All right, with that, my name is Jacob Fortjam.
And I'm Ryan Harkness.
Have a good Atheist Day, everybody.